On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, before we get into the episode, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. Our two sponsors this episode are Relax Sauna and BioSteel. They've both been gracious enough to provide us with a discount code. So when you're at checkout, use the code MLB100 at Relax Sauna for $100 off your purchase, and use the code PBSCCS25 for 25% off from BioSteel. Again, thank you to our sponsors for this episode, and let's get into it. All right, everybody, I'm here with Dong Lin of the Philadelphia Phillies organization. Dong, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Chris, thank you very much for having me. I'm super excited to be here and to chat with you a little bit more. Like you said, Dong Lin, Major League Assistant Strength Coach for the Philadelphia Phillies. Going into my third season as the Major League Assistant. I've only known one organization, Phillies, since 2005, so I'm entering my 16th season, and I've spent nine of them, or going into it, nine at the Major League level. 2005 was my first year, and I spent time in Clearwater that season as a strength and conditioning coach, and also as an athletic assistant athletic trainer. I carry dual certification. And from there, I moved to short season in Batavia, good old Batavia, New York, and spent a season there, got my feet wet with regards to short season ball. And an opportunity I seized in 2007 to become the coordinator the following year. And that was a wonderful experience. It happened quickly. I learned fast while on my feet, and then an opportunity at the Major League level opened up for 2008, the following year, and I was hired to become the Major League strength coach at that time in 2008, which was a super successful year for the Phillies organization at that time. And and ever since then, I was 6 years there at the Major League level, then back to AAA in Lehigh Valley for four seasons before coming back up as the assistant Major League strength coach.
So something I've kind of noticed with some of the guys in the Phillies is that they are the ATC, CSCS dual position. And I feel like that's got to help you guys. Being able to at least converse with the ATCs that are there and maybe help them out with some things. I know, like, for our organization, we have two ATCs and a strength coach at each level. But I know a lot of other places don't do that. So I'm sure that probably helps you guys with your relationships with the actual ATCs at the affiliates.
Yes. Yeah. No, I believe it does. Just have common language to understanding, you know, where they're coming from an athlete training side and what they're trying to achieve when working with the athletes, and having commonality with regards to what they're doing and then how we can help out and complement that from a weight room standpoint. I believe is beneficial, and vice versa. Okay, you know, what we're trying to do in the strength and conditioning world, and, you know, the more they're in tune with what we do, if it's Olympic lifts or if it's plyometrics or whatever it may be, there's some understanding of what we're trying to achieve. I think it helps both departments to be able to speak that common language. So yeah, the Phillies have strived to kind of be in that direction with regards to hiring dual certifieds. Nowadays, you kind of notice that it's difficult to find individuals that carry both those credentials, and by no means you need to have it. I think it certainly has helped our organization, but we do value, of course, just if you want to call it peer strength and conditioning coaches.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things, if I could really go back in time and do it a little bit differently, was try to work more towards like that ATC in undergrad, just because I think it does make you more valuable to have both. And I mean, I think we're all in the position we are because of the path we took, and I don't know if I would change anything, but if there was one thing that I could go back on, it might be like pushing that ATC a little bit harder in my undergrad so that I did have both certifications. I think it, like I said, just makes you more valuable in the organization, and being able to speak that common language is always going to be a good thing.
Yeah. Ofer, and you hit it right on the spot with regards to just knowing, I think the more information you can gather, whether it's another credential or another a degree with regards to a specialty, it's just going to help you with your strength and conditioning realm. Like me as a strength coach, you know, when I program for somebody, if it's a tissue prep routine that I have to be cognizant of, I have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, he might have a injury history along with these type of deficits and asymmetries, and how does that impact somebody who's got this pre-existing issue with that he's complained about to or shared with our athletic training staff. So I will gear, you know, like a tissue prep individualized program to answer those, kind of like, you know, to correct those problems if I can in any way possible. And at the end of the day, we all work together, both departments, and trying to manage our athletes, you know, daily complaints in a sense, not in a negative way, just what they might present with that day from previous performance or days before. And we just want them to be able to step back on the field and produce and participate. So having that, just sharing that information and having that common knowledge, I think it certainly helps a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So you've been around for quite a while, and I actually have family in the Batavia area. So I know Batavia. So you may not have your best baseball story from Batavia. I'm sure you do have good ones, but I do want to know what your best professional baseball story is.
Oh yeah. You know what? Now that it's funny that you just mentioned the Batavia story, or just being in Batavia. And one of the funny stories I could tell you, it does come from there. And maybe I will share it with you real quick. And then go back to the one that I was going to share. The Batavia story is real funny. We were on the bus ride and we're riding back from the road. And we happened to put on the movie Summer Catch with Freddie Prinze Jr. And I had watched it before, and, you know, Jessica Biel's in it, and everybody is just, you know, awe and you know, and just in awe of her, basically. But anyways, Freddie Prinze Jr. is a pitcher, and he signs with the Phillies at the end of the story. And I hope I'm not spoiling it for anybody who hasn't watched it, but basically, you know, he says, the scout goes, "Congratulations, you've signed with the Phillies. Here we are sitting on the bus riding back to our stadium, just pulling up to Batavia. Congratulations," says the scout. And he says, "You're going to be a Batavia muck dog." And so it's just like, it was perfect, like, timing. We are pulling up to our own stadium in Batavia, and here it is, Freddie Prinze Jr. signs with the Batavia Muck Dogs to go. And so, of course, the whole bus just blurts out laughing. And that, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, because it was just a great moment. And it's one of those things that you get to share with your fellow athletes, teammates, coaches, and it's just like that's the behind the scenes side of baseball that not a lot of people get to experience, that is very special, special to me or for me. And I'm sure you have stories to share yourself. If I may, one more real quick. And I think this one, it's dear to me for the fact that first, maybe the privilege to work with this individual, and being a strength coach, we develop relationships with athletes, maybe certain guys, because we just connect with them and we work with them really well. 2010, I had a chance to work with Roy Halladay, who is in Donovan Santos, and Chris Joyner can speak from the Blue Jays, can speak so much further on their experiences with him. But this person, so I call it the 5 a.m. club. He would be ready to go in the weight room during spring training at 5 a.m. And ready to work. He, at that time, I was young. I was on my third year in the major leagues. And here is this ominous figure that's won a Cy Young in the AL. He's coming over to the Phillies, and he comes with a program, a binder, thick, you know, everything's recorded. And I'm just trying to understand why this guy is doing this stuff at 5 a.m. nobody else has. You know, I've from the start in 2005 until up until 2010, no one has trained at 5 a.m. And there's something significant about that. You know, I can fast forward now to 2020 and think about what he did and why he did it. And I can understand that there's so much he can accomplish early in the morning for himself to make sure that he is prepared from a physical standpoint, from a mental standpoint, for what is asked of him in the game. Along with that, he was a team player. You know, he would do all his conditioning before the sun rose. But then when the pitchers had their conditioning, he wasn't just going to walk off the field and say, oh, no, I'm done. He was a team player. He would run with them on top of what he had already accomplished. So the 5 a.m. club kind of taught me, gave me those nuggets of information just about how he approached his professional life, his family life. He made sure he did stuff early so that when he was able to leave the field, he got to spend time with his family. And it's so, like, I don't think he realized, but by through his example, a 5 a.m. club, it's, you know, it teaches about life experience, personal experiences, professional experiences. And I wanted to share that just because there's a lot of people who don't know, never got a chance to meet him, and he's a special human being.
Yeah, two things. So one, I had grown up, like I said, I have family in Batavia, so I've been to a few Muck Dogs games myself.
Oh, yes.
And then the other thing is, it's, I mean, that's such a good story. And the thing is, for me, like, guys that succeed at a really high level like that, I mean, it's awesome to hear stories of how hard they're working and how much they're putting into their careers. And I think, you know, whether you're a strength coach or a player, the biggest disappointment or fear in life is, like, looking back and just, like, what if? Like, what if I would have did this better, or if I would have worked a little harder, or if I would have got there a little earlier or taken it a little more seriously? And, you know, guys that succeed at that level, it's almost like they have that fear of, like, when I'm done, like, I don't want to look back and say, what if? And it sounds like he was in that boat. And not only that, like, setting himself up for quality family time and everything. Like, it just sounds like he was an overall well-rounded individual and really cared about his career and his family. And, you know, I had heard stories of how hard of a worker he was just, you know, through the grapevine, but I had never heard it directly from somebody who had worked with him. So it's refreshing and reassuring to hear that kind of stuff about him, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. You're right. It's the longer I'm able to stay in the game, I guess it also says I'm an old guy in the game, but you do recognize those commonalities of these successful athletes that truly take it to another level. Part of it is it's great to have made it to the big leagues, and now it's the ability to push further and continue to be to take it to the next level in a sense of competition, mind, physicality, whatever it may be, because everyone else is going to try to play catch up with you. And so in order for you to stay ahead of the game or ahead of that pack, you have to push further. And I noticed that in a lot of these athletes who have 10 plus, more like 15 years in the major leagues, and they are in pristine shape in regards to just, like, mind and physical. But they're also family men, and they're also humble and grateful for the support staff that they are working with. So it's more than just they're more than just the athlete on the field that we commonly see. They are just a well-rounded individual, probably the best way to say it.
Yeah, that's honestly one of the best parts about this job, and one of the most, like, overlooked, underappreciated things. It's like, we get to watch them on the field compete at the highest level of this game. And, like, for them, you know, they're just in their natural environment, but we get to know the man as well outside of the game. And we get to know their work habits, and we get to know their family, and we get to know what kind of person they are and how they were raised and all of that stuff. And, you know, you build really solid relationships, and, you know, you have a player, and then 5 years later, they text you just to say what's up, or, you know, and you're like, man, I really, like, this is a really awesome part of this that, like, maybe some people don't really understand because they just see the game and they see the guy on the field, and they see the competitor. Well, we get to see him off the field doing his other stuff and all the prep that goes into him.
Yeah.
Being able to play at his highest level on the field. So it's a cool part of the job for sure.
Very, very much so. Very much so. Totally agree.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
You know what? That's a great question. That's a tough one. But one that does come to mind, and it's been brought up to me on a couple occasions, is when you've been in the big leagues you've had the opportunity and you are in the big leagues for an extended amount of time. And some people will say to you, like, hey, you don't have to do anything more. You're good. You know, all is well. What more can you ask for? You've won a championship. You've got to work with elite athletes. You know, you have a house and a picket fence and a dog, et cetera. And things are good, you know, just ride it out basically. And that's where I think the crazy thing is, like, that comment to me is what I would deem as kind of like silly, in the sense of that means it's okay to be content. And that's the last thing. And I would want to share that with others, is the fact that being content, once you get to that dream goal or that position that you want to be in, is probably the worst approach that one can do. That's a time, once you get here, you need to keep pushing on. Just like, and you need to recognize where you're at and accomplish what you need to get accomplished. But then you also have to look at, you know, moving ahead. What do I want to stand for? What's my impact going to be 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? If I'm able to be there that long, what am I going to be able to do for the organization? How can I continue to grow it? So to answer your question, it's just, I think being complacent or just okay with, hey, where you're at, even if it's at the highest of levels, I think that would be crazy to think that way. Would be kind of a crazy approach. You have to push on.
Yeah, I've heard from some mentors of mine and some coaches that have been around a while, it's like when you have a dream job and you get there, it's like, okay, now what? Like, a lot of people kind of fall off because either it's not like what they had expected, like, oh, you know, I'm in the big leagues now, like, this is all fun and games. Like, no, it's still hard work. And so they've always said, like, it's not an end goal, it's just the next goal. You know, like, for a guy like myself in the minor leagues, my end goal is not the big leagues, it's just my next goal, you know. And when I get there, I'll reevaluate my situation. I'm still going to, you know, do all my work hard, whatever it is, and then find my next goal. I don't know if there really ever is an end goal. You know, it's like when you start lifting and you look in the mirror, you're like, I look pretty good. And then you never, ever look as good as you want to, right? Like, right. You know, right. You could be absolutely shredded. You could be lifting, you know, oh, my deadlift is 600. Well, how do I get to 700? How do I get to 800? And I think those people that stay hungry like that and just keep setting next goals, and then, you know, they hit that goal and they set a new one, those are the ones that are really like pushing the field forward, pushing themselves and really pushing everybody around them just to get better constantly.
Absolutely. And I mean, you just said it right there, like, just pushing the field forward, right? And us as strength and conditioning coaches, I would hope, are continuing to push the field forward, whether together as a strength and conditioning coaches society, or just within your own organization. How can you propel and educate your coaches that are in the player development level, that are looking to get to where you are one day, hopefully? And, you know, it's just kind of, I think it is important for us to share that knowledge with them to help them get to, you know, to achieve that goal as well, whether it's with us or with another organization.
So kind of building off of that, what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe just in general, and then more specifically in professional baseball.
Yeah, that's a great lead in. It actually worked. When it comes to being a good coach in general, you better communication. It starts with that. Trusting in what you know, identifying what you know, your fundamentals, being strong at those basic cueing, the exercises, but communication is huge. And then also always just teaching the athletes that you're working with. It doesn't matter if it's a young adolescent, teenager, that you're working with or a professional athlete, you have to be a good teacher. You have to be a good communicator. And then you have to know what your philosophy and what you stand for, what your strong points are. And you're going to teach that and teach it well. From there, you're going to grow it. With regards to like professional baseball, what's important is certainly understanding your organizational philosophy. Along with that, identifying what your personal philosophy is and seeing if it coincides. And hopefully it does have some carryover, that you're not completely off the track with regards to where you stand in regards to the organization's position. But if that is the case, then that's where it goes back to communication is important. Collaboration with your, you know, your organization, whether it's player development, your front office, your athletic training staff, if it's your performance staff, whatever it may be, communication and collaboration is huge. And then the other thing, the other couple things is, as a strength and conditioning coach, you're going to learn the basics. You're going to learn your organizational lingo, language. But then, as a, just like anybody, how we talked about being a strength coach at the major league level, once you get there, you have to start, you continue to grow, find ways of growing. And so thinking outside the box is also important. And that requires sometimes talking to people who aren't within baseball. And I'll further elaborate on that. And at some point, team ability is a word that I learned. Ken Crenshaw, athletic trainer with the Diamondbacks, he mentioned this word team ability. And what it means is within a group of strength coaches or a department, when there's an opportunity to lead, and it's your opportunity to lead, then you seize it. But then also recognizing, with regards to team ability, the ability to follow when it's a time to follow, just recognizing what your role is in at that time. So team ability, I think, is a very valuable word or philosophy to follow in an organization that entails so many moving parts. In order to be successful, everybody has to communicate, collaborate, and work together for a common goal, is to succeed for their athletes.
Yeah, and kind of building off of that, what advice do you have for others? Maybe young coaches just looking to get into baseball, or somebody who's in like my position, who's, you know, next step is hopefully the big leagues, or just even other coaches that have been around a long time that, like I said, are just trying to push the field forward and stay on top of things. Do you have any advice?
Great question. What comes to mind with regards to that would be, you know, respect the past, respect the coaches that came before, that were here before us, what they've done to accelerate our program to where it is today. So acknowledging them for what they've done is important. Also, the current state that you're in, what you know and what you don't know, and that's where it allows you that opportunity to kind of fast forward to the future and plan for the future that, hey, you know what? I would like to learn X, Y, and Z. Currently, I know this, and this is my strong suit. I acknowledge what came, you know, what was before in the organization. This is where we currently stand. This is where I hope to propel us in the future. I think those are key factors to identify, along with always staying a student of the game. We can learn a lot by communicating and talking to our R&D department, our athletic trainers, our pitching coach, our skills, you know, skill set coaches. Because nowadays, as we all know, everybody's using technology. And so communicating that information and learning from, and finding out what do they see? You know, what do you see when you're working with a pitcher out on the mound early in the day? What are you looking for? How can I apply some of this, if it's just the back leg loading, inability to load? Maybe it's a discrepancy from range of motion. You know, how does that apply in the athletic training room? What can they do? What can we do? So it's just working together, but also always observing, attention to detail, and being a learner, basically a student of the game is important. And that's really applies to life in all honesty. Just respecting the opportunity that people present us with you know, when they're teaching us something and we're just observing something. And there's always some takeaways that us coaches can gain from those moments.
Yeah, one of the things with professional baseball that's kind of different for strength coaches compared to maybe some other settings is just how much time we spend with everybody. We're, you know, from the start of the day to the end of the day, we're with everybody in the clubhouse. And so you get to have kind of those conversations and relationships with like the baseball coaches. And the game kind of seems to be going that way anyways, where like coaches are valuing strength coaches more. And like, you know, hey, this guy had a bullpen today and it didn't look great. And like you said, maybe it's a back leg loading issue. Can we take a look at his screen? And maybe give him some exercises to work in the weight room. And I think just the collaboration and having a similar language throughout is becoming kind of a big thing in baseball. And it's awesome that, you know, we get to kind of collaborate with the coaches and the coaches collab with us. And it's all in the name of just making the player better and giving them the best chance to succeed. So there are some people who are kind of hesitant and like, you know, stay in your lane. And I get it. Like, obviously we're not pitching coaches and we're not pretending to be pitching coaches, right. But we can definitely collaborate with those coaches to kind of help the player get to where we want them to be. Right. Like I said, we both want the same thing. We just want the pitcher to do well out in the mound. Nobody wants to send a pitcher out and be like, man, I really hope he gets his shit kicked in today. Like, nobody's saying that, you know. No. What I mean? We're all like, I hope this guy goes out and absolutely shoves today. How can I help him? And how can the pitching coach and how can the ATC help? And like I said, I think baseball's kind of moving towards that collaborative approach. And so, like you said, you can learn from anybody in the clubhouse, and we spend so much time with them that honestly, it's hard not to have those opportunities. Like, if you go a full day without talking to your pitching coach, like, you were there for what, 12-13 hours at the ballpark and you didn't talk to your coach once, like, that's crazy.
Right. And and they know how, I mean, we use a pitching coach for example, they know how important, or they I believe they recognize how important it is from a strength and conditioning standpoint, that, you know, if they're trying to work on something out on the mound, whether it's to raise their arm higher or have a better drive, stride length longer, whatever it may be, there's an opportunity for them to talk with us, and we can help them achieve that too. And along with, we're trying to, you know, prevent injuries at the same time, improve performance. But it's, yeah, like you said, it's trending that way, where we're the importance of talking to one another and learning from each other. It's not just talking, but actually learning to what you see, how can I help, and vice versa, how can they help? And I think we know one thing that we've done well, I hope we all do well in strength and conditioning as coaches in baseball, is that we develop trustworthy relationships with our athletes so that they know, you know, what we're prescribing for them, programming for them in the weight room is adequate for them, that, you know, you've taken into account what the amount of workload they've done on the mound, how many pitches did they throw, what are they working on that's different, and this is what the athletic trainers are doing this now to scale back, and what are we doing in the weight room to help basically balance out the workload that they're doing, making sure that it's not overtraining or undertraining, right? So we have to, that's where so much more emphasis is focused on the ability to recover, but at the same time, we're still asking them to perform at great extents.
Yeah, one of the funniest things for me is like when a guy, you know, really, really questions what you're giving them, and you're just like, yeah, I'm purposely trying to put you in a position to fail or to hurt yourself or to not succeed. Like, that's not my end game. You know, I didn't come to the ballpark this morning and say, you know what, I'm going to try to ruin this guy's career. Like, and then you tell them that and they're like, yeah, you know, you're probably right. I would assume you want the best for me. Like, yeah, of course I want the best for you. Like, that's why I'm giving you this. And they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, they just have to give you a hard time sometimes. And you're like, you know what? I'm really, really not trying to hurt you, even if you think that, you know, running 5 gassers is going to kill you. Like, I promise you, these gassers are not going to kill you. Yeah. You'll be okay.
They're going to keep you honest. They're going to challenge you, which is, you know, and rightly so, they'll challenge us strength coaches because we are asking them to trust in us. And they're going to challenge, they're going to ask the why. Why are you making us run this number of, like you said, gassers, or this number of polls. So they're keeping us honest in a sense, and rightly so, but we also will do the same to them and be like, hey, are you sure that you can only do 4 gassers? Because really, I think you can't, you know, I've seen you do 6 before, and really let's, are we under training? Are we, are we holding ourselves back? You can, so that's part of, and we spend a lot of time together. We have 142 games or 162 games, whatever the number is. It's a lot of time together to, you don't want to develop a relationship where I'm here to hurt you, or I'm here to make you underperform, you know? So yeah, I want to have a good working relationship on everyday basis, that when you show up in the weight room to work with me, you want to be here, and you are, there's an objective to what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and truth be told, it makes us better coaches when they question us, because if you don't have a reason for doing something, they're going to tear you apart. You know, like, hey, we're doing 6 gassers. Well, why are we doing 6? And you're like, because I said so. And they're like, nope, I'm not doing it. It's not like it makes you be a better coach. You have to have your, your apples in a row, and you have to be prepared. And so if they never questioned us, like, we might just stay stagnant forever. So for me, like, I embrace them questioning us 100%.
Absolutely. Accountability, both directions, right? Both, it's a two-way street. If we're going to hold them accountable, they'll do the same to us.
100%. Do you have any continuing education resources for us? Maybe books that you'd recommend, or seminars that you've attended, or podcasts you're listening to? Just where are you going for your own continuing ed?
Oh, I elaborate a little bit on this, and kind of like thinking outside the box, or learning from others in other areas, not necessarily strength and conditioning, but some key books or authors that hit home with regards to strength and conditioning over the years for me, was one is called Relentless by Tim Grover. He worked with Michael Jordan is one, and he talks about the mindset mentality. And so being relentless, that no matter what, you've achieved one thing, but it's continue to push on. That's a great book. Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink is a former Navy SEAL, is an excellent one. It teaches you to work with above and below, basically. Like if you're a coordinator, for instance, your ability to work with your major league staff and your minor league staff that you're in charge of. So it's a great read right there. Legacy from the All Blacks, New Zealand All Blacks, is a great book from James Kerr. That one just talks about culture. If you ever have a chance to follow that, the All Blacks organization, they are, they take culture and respect to another level, that by no means do I expect our athletes to be able to do that in baseball, but we can certainly learn and appreciate what they're able to do. So those are some key books of mine. Podcasts lately I've been latched on to On Purpose by Jay Shetty, who gives me a lot of like wisdom. And most recently I kind of posted this on Instagram, was that he had a talk, a podcast with Kobe Bryant, who will be dearly missed. And I knew his impact from a sports world, but his impact's even further from a mentality, children, books, storytelling, how he looks at life, his Mamba mentality. Anyhow, Jay Shetty has a great interview with him, podcast with him on how he looks at fear. And so if you have a chance to listen to it, I highly recommend that. Podcast, that's my go-to at this moment. And then seminars, speaking of learning outside the box or in a different avenue, would be like Baseball Sports Medical Conference that was recent in New York City. It has to do with PBATS, our Athletic Trainers Professional Baseball Association hosts that. And just being in the room with those smart individuals and just intellects, there's a lot of information you can take away from that. Yes, being an athletic trainer helps. But even in a mindset of a strength and conditioning coach, just hearing what they have to say, knowing the intricacies of surgical repairs, and just hearing them talk about how they go about rehabbing the biceps, for instance, or UCL repair, whatever it may be, just a different perspective to allows us, myself as a strength coach, kind of view things a little bit differently other than just attacking it from purely a training standpoint. So I, that's a seminar I attend. Animal Flow is another one by Mike Fitch, which is really good. Along with Kin Stretch that FRC does, Andreo Spina does that one. I've done those and applied them in our setting. Certainly not the full gamut because it doesn't always fit with every individual in our sport. And as you learn that, you know, there's no one template that fits all our professional athletes, but, those are some seminars and podcasts and books that I've, followed over the years and learned a lot from. So they're very valuable to me.
I love the idea of the seminars there. And just like you said, there is no one template. So if you have, you know, 10 tools in the toolbox, you can only go to 10. But if you have 20, then you have, you know, double the tools to get the job done. And so for me, I think that's awesome that you're learning from people outside of just true strength and conditioning. Like I did an FRC, FRA. This off season, and just it kind of opened my eyes to like there are other ways to accomplish things other than just always hitting the barbell or always hitting the dumbbells or always doing this. Like you're gonna have a guy and maybe they come from another org and they've done, you know, something in the other org and they're like, hey, I used to do this, what do you think about this? And either you know about it and you can speak on it or you don't, and if you don't, you say, oh, let me do a little research, I'll get back to you. But you know, if it's part of your routine, then obviously it's helped you because you're at, you know, you're at a high level. And so I think just being able to educate yourself on outside of just the traditional strength and conditioning practices is great. 100%. Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, it's helpful. It's helpful. But at the same time, we don't want to disregard the importance of knowing like how to Olympic lift or how to squat properly and kettlebell swing, for instance. So, you know, there's, those are, like you said, they're all tools that we can utilize, and knowing what our foundational moves are, hinging, squatting, loaded carries, whatever it may be, you still want to be great at those too, along with having the ability to kind of speak another language in regards to training, because there's so much out there.
Of course, man. Yeah. It's, I mean, for me, I'm a barbell guy. Anybody that's listening to this podcast knows I'm a big time barbell guy. And but just taking some of the things from the FRC have really helped improve my barbell lifts for myself. Mm-hmm. And, like you said, you don't run the full gamut, you know, you're not going to throw out your whole program and only do, you know, pails and rails and cars and all that stuff, or you're only going to animal flow. Like it's all bits and pieces of your program. If 80% is barbell work and 20% is the other stuff, like that's a pretty solid balance of stuff where you're still getting in your big, proponents of your program, but the minor details are kind of filling it in as well. So
I totally agree. I'm
right there with you. You don't want to throw it all out for one thing, but at the same time, you don't want to only commit to one thing either, especially in our setting where guys are coming from different organizations, different training backgrounds, things like that. Like you might have to do different things to get the goal that you're trying to get to.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
So this wasn't in the notes, but I feel like you travel a lot, and I see you all over the place on Instagram, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it does seem like you travel a lot. And so I do kind of want to talk about that just because we are talking education. So two things. First, selfishly, where is the coolest place that you've traveled to? And then second, more importantly and relevant to the podcast, is how is that traveling making you either a better coach or a better man or husband or father, or how is that traveling kind of relating to a better career for you overall?
Oh, what a great question. You're right. 100%. I am a, I don't know if it's even a word, it's travel junkie, but I'm been bitten by the travel bug, and, I will try to fill in my time, free time for when you have it, to explore the world. Definitely. One of the best places I've been to is India. My best friend got married and I traveled to India for 2 weeks. I went there a week earlier to kind of just dive right in and experience the culture. of India before the wedding. And so the 3-day wedding after that was an incredible experience. Got to travel to see the Taj Mahal, which is an amazing sight, one of the wonders of the world that I hope everyone has an opportunity to experience. India is up there on my list. Along with that, how has it impacted my family? I think it's actually, I have a 9-year-old little girl, Riley, who every time that we go on a travel vacation together, whether it was Costa Rica most recently to Mexico for a month before, when she's culturally immersed in that, she just blossoms to learning to speak the language, to even though, you know, we're playing with other kids who don't speak a common language. You know, she speaks English and the other child speaks Spanish. We were in Panama, but they played for an hour running around in circles, chasing one another. And so just like when I watch that, it just shows that, you know, sometimes you don't have to speak the same language to be able to connect. So connection for me is a big thing. And connection is important in the world of strength and conditioning to be able to find common ground with our athletes, with our fellow staff members, to be able to speak the same language and to be able to get the message through to what we're trying to achieve. So travel has done that. It's certainly opened my eyes. It's grounded me in a sense that, you know, it's sometimes not needing to have a lot of certain things such as material keeps things. You don't have to have fancy new gadgets or tools in the weight room in order to accomplish the basic of a lunge and doing it well, or a squat and doing it well. So you see how I kind of like bring it all together in a sense that travel does that for me. And for my family, it's very important to stay connected. And we're just traveling together and experiencing new adventures and languages and food and cultures have been an amazing thing for us. And it's definitely a staple in our life. Thank you for asking that question. I'm very fortunate. Baseball provides a lot of travel as well domestically, and I will take advantage of that, as you will see in social media as well. But at the same time, if I can explore abroad, I will do the same there.
Yeah, two things. The first is, like, kids are so funny like that. They'll just put aside their differences and just to have fun with each other. And it's like, honestly, adults could probably learn a thing or two from just that experience right there. Your daughter speaks English. The person she's playing with speaks Spanish. Like, you know, as adults, sometimes we feel like we can't connect with people because they speak different languages or they come from different parts of the world. But like you said, you have to find a commonality with people. And sometimes it's not language, and connect in a better way. And then the other thing, my wife has the travel bug as well. And as a kid, we played travel hockey. So like we would travel around, you know, up to Canada or whatever throughout Buffalo, but we'd go to Florida to visit my grandparents, but it was never like we really traveled. And now she's like got a whole list of places. And so we did Hawaii this off season. And it was like the first, like, I mean, it's still within the States, but like, it was a good trip for us. And she's like, all right, next year we're going to do Costa Rica. And the year after that, we're going to do this. So the thing is, for me, like, it's really opened my eyes because, like I said, as a kid growing up, I didn't experience all of that. And like you said, baseball allows you to travel within the season, and then you have that downtime in the off season where you can really travel. And I've talked to some other people who, you know, one of the guys I saw at On Base U, he's in Egypt right now, and he's telling me about his trips. And it's just really cool to know that you can go out and experience the world and learn from other people and learn from other cultures and get the cuisine and everything. And so she's got the travel bug, and it's one of the many reasons I'm very happy we're together. And she's always pushing me, like, hey, where should we go to? Where should we go to? And then, you know, I'll be sitting at home at night, and next thing I know, I have like flights pulled up, and I'm like, where can we fly to? And I'm like, I'm gonna travel too. And so it's really, an underappreciated thing if you don't travel and you don't know the difference. But when you start traveling, it's like you said, you become a junkie, a travel junkie. You're like addicted to, like, where can I go to next? So India sounds really, really awesome. And, it's cool that you got to go out there for the wedding and you got to go out there and have some spare time as well. Yeah. And I saw the Costa Rica stuff. So, I'm envious of you, but maybe next year, you know, when we go to Costa Rica in the off season, you and I can discuss some stuff there, but it's
absolutely please let me know if you do that. Travel is amazing. It certainly brings cultures together
for sure, man. Yeah, and like you said, you can connect with people all over the world, and like you said, as a coach, it helps you to find commonalities with people, even if you don't think you have anything. We all have something in common with everybody. It's just trying to figure that out.
Yes, exactly.
So do you have time for me for a lightning round? I don't want to keep you from your family too long, but I think we are rolling pretty good here. It's four questions, as long or as short answers as you want, and then I promise I'll let you go.
All right, let's do it. I got time. Let's do it.
All right. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
What comes to mind, I'm going to pay homage to the strength coaches prior to me. You got guys like Tim Maxey, Jose Vasquez, Paul Fournier, Trung Chow, just influential individuals. Even most recently, strength coach of the year, Kiyoshi Momose, who you know personally, when he spoke in front of the group to say thank you, he acknowledged his crew. And that speaks so much, so highly of the person in that position, which is a leadership role. And I must say, I acknowledge and respect, what was said there. And I can tell that, even though I've never worked personally with him, but you can tell he's a good strength coach and influential to his group of strength coaches.
He's the best, man. Honestly, the best. And like you said, you gotta pay respect to the guys that have done it before us and have been doing it for a long time. So that list is a really, really solid list. And if people don't know who they are, they definitely should, do a little digging and figure out more about those people that you just named.
Just reach out to them. And they're just great individuals that have so much knowledge and information. And the thing is that they've kept up with the times when it's changed. You go from the old days or the traditional lifts to the new with technology, et cetera. So they've kept up with it. So reach out to them. They're valuable resources for all strength coaches.
Couldn't agree more. One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
It's gotta be the kettlebell. It's so versatile. You can do so much with it. we've gone as far as taking, I guess I've already started it. I'm going to finish it. Borrowed the kettlebell in Miami and taking it back to the hotel and done a beach workout with the boys, not the players, just the staff. And we've done some beach workouts, but we returned the kettlebell. So, it's just a versatile piece of equipment that you can do so much with it. And, that's the one for sure.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Professionally would have to be, I don't like to mention accomplishments, but one thing I am proud of is when I was no longer the major league strength coach after 6 years, taking a step back and going to AAA, at the time was very difficult because it was a bit of, in my mind, a sense of failure, or I let my family down, et cetera. I was in a position where I thought was the dream goal, but in hindsight, or now when you look back at it, the ability to rebound and make it back to the big leagues after the fact, not just because I deserved it, but it took time to recognize things I could improve on. Recognize that you know what, it's a challenge that I took head on and said, you know what, after a while, that you can't just dwell on the fact that you're no longer there, but you have to move forward. And how can you get better? And how can you help those that you're working with at the AAA level, those you're working with at the major league level, how can you continue to contribute? That is probably I would be proud of, to stand by and say, you know what, I got knocked down. I stood back up and I reflected and I figured it out to get me back to this position. And from now until whenever I move on or they move me on, I'll continue to give it my best and always push forward. And then from accomplishment is just recognizing that baseball takes a lot of our time away from family. And acknowledging that and recognizing that and trying to find a balance point between family life and baseball life is very important. And I'm by no means am I perfect in any sense with regards to that balance. But I will try to maximize my time with my family when I'm able to, such as traveling with them or finding adventures to go to, or maybe it's just indoor climbing. If it's that, it's still something that is just out of the normal routine. So I like to say trying to be a better husband and father for my family, and maybe an influencer in that sense, is one of my biggest accomplishments.
Yeah, and kudos to you with the, you know, rebounding and getting back to the big leagues. There's a lot of times where maybe somebody in that situation or a similar situation where they think they should get a job and somebody else gets it could just be bitter and just, you know, shut it down. And, well, they don't like me. This is unfair, whatever. But, you know, being able to take a step back and really think about, hey, if I improve on this, it'll get me back there someday, and just keep pushing to get back to there. I mean, that speaks volumes of your character and what you do. And it's, you know, it's very easy to fall into that trap of just being bitter and, well, they put me in AAA. This is a demotion. This is dumb. Like, I don't want to be here. Or you can just look at it as, hey, I need to learn. I need to get better. And, you know, I'll get back up there. It's just, I got to improve myself. And they think this is the way to do it. So for you, that, I mean, that's awesome that, you know, you stuck it out and now you're back in the big leagues, and obviously you're still continuing to learn and progress on yourself even after getting back there. So kudos to you on that one, man, for real. Big.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that, Chris. And I am grateful to the organization for keeping me on, and, you know, it I have to recognize them for doing that too. You know, because a lot of times once you're let go, they, you know, you're dismissed entirely out of the organization. So my gratitude goes to the Phillies organization, along with fellow strength and conditioning coaches that I actually mentioned earlier that were, you know, that reached out to me, you know, I reached out to them and provided me a lot of really good information as to, you know what, that there's a silver lining to this, or approach it this way. Let go of your disappointment and focus, you know, turn your focus more on how to get yourself better, you know, not necessarily just to get back there, but just improve as a coach, as an individual. So there's a support staff that I've relied on a lot.
100%, man. It's all just about your perspective and how you look at it. And you know, life isn't always fair, and it is what it is, and everything is a learning opportunity. And if you just keep getting better and pushing yourself to learn, eventually, like, you'll get to where you want to be. And then, like we talked about earlier, you'll set new goals and there'll be new obstacles along the way, and you just keep crushing those. And I don't know if we ever get to where we want to we want to be, and then we just retire. But last one for me, man. Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I would work in nonprofit, and more for countries that are less fortunate, that are in need of. I want to spend some time, whether it's cleaning up the environment, building a school, or working with young children who don't have much of a structured physical education program. Promote activity, basically. Promote movement for children that have less than what we have. And so we're very fortunate. My daughter's very fortunate to have all sorts of sports programs that she can access. But you also, through my travels, I've noticed that some kids don't even have a pair of shoes, and, you know, they rely on just a soccer ball, and they haven't been introduced to baseball. And baseball is such an amazing sport that brings so many people together that if I can provide some sort of educational component or help a community, I think that's what would be my venture I would tackle.
Right on, man. Helping people and getting to travel. It sounds like it's right up your alley for sure.
Hey, throw in a wave in there too, and a little bit of surfing, and count me in.
This has been really awesome, man. It's been a really, really good talk, and I appreciate you coming on. If the listeners want to get in touch, where can we get more? Is social media the best place, or is there a better place?
Social media works really well. I'm on Instagram, on Facebook, Twitter. I use one site to be able to reach all three, but Instagram for Dong Lin. You can catch me there.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it again, and we'll be catching up real soon.
For sure. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Dong. I hope you enjoyed this one. Honestly, I thought this was a really, really good talk. There was a ton of stuff to take away. I really appreciate Dong sharing all of his knowledge and wisdom that he has acquired over the years with us. The three things that I did take away were: be a student of the game, respect the past and the coaches who have come before us, and be open to collaborating with everyone. Before we end this episode, I just want to give one more shout out to our sponsors, Relax Sauna and BioSteel. Remember, they did provide us with discount codes, so MLB100 for $100 off at Relax Sauna, and PBSCCS25 for 25% off of your BioSteel order. So thank you again to our sponsors. Thank you again to Dong for the episode, and we'll be talking to you again on the next one.